WHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Ceasefire talks to end the war in Gaza will resume next week. And CBS News has learned Iran is expected to delay its threatened retaliation against Israel to give those negotiations more time. Meanwhile, there's more violence in the region, as CBS's Rami Innocencio reports.
That Israeli settler attack on that Palestinian village of Jit appears to be an attempt to derail ceasefire talks in Qatar. But Secretary of State Antony Blinken has revealed he is headed to the Mideast.
Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris unveils her economic agenda in Raleigh, North Carolina. She says she supports a child tax credit and housing incentives.
We should be doing everything we can to make it more affordable to buy a home.
Hurricane Ernesto is barreling towards Bermuda as a Cat 2 storm expected to fully reach the island early tomorrow. CBS's Dave Malkoff is there.
Just hours before landfall, the largest grocery store was packed for a weather wipeout.
The best thing to do is obviously get your supplies beforehand.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The economy is doing well, but anecdotal evidence of Wisconsin food pantries suggests people are still struggling. Savannah Tomei Olson reports on one food pantry where traffic has doubled in the past year.
The Oregon Area Food Pantry has already served almost 550 people this month, and we're only halfway through August. The price of food is up, the cost of rent is up, and childcare is astronomical. The executive director says most people who rely on the pantry work, some of them two and three jobs, but with rising costs of living, it's just not enough. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Some county fairs in Wisconsin are banning lactating dairy cows this summer out of concern over bird flu spreading to dairy cows. Bird flu has not been found in any Wisconsin dairy herds, but it is affecting cows in states like Minnesota, Iowa, and Michigan. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
To everyone making time for life's best moments, let our team member Sandy share how Culver's is serving up celebration by the scoop.
Our rich and creamy fresh frozen custard makes every day a little bit sweeter. Enjoying a handcrafted treat with all the ooey gooey toppings you love, now that's worth celebrating.
Come to Culver's and let us serve you a sweet treat to make every moment count.
From Wisconsin with love,
welcome to Delicious.
Culver's on 8th Street South in Wisconsin Rapids.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Seems J.D. Vance, well, the least popular, least favored vice presidential pick, at least in the last 20 years, according to some new analysis of polling data from 538. They look at Tim Walz, the governor of Minnesota, and the vice presidential pick on the Democratic side, doing a lot better. His favorable ratings up there, 38%, not unfavorable, 33%, which you go, you don't even know the guy. As opposed to J.D. Vance, favorable ratings, 33%, unfavorable, 42%. And I think, here's the thing, I think the more we learn about each of the candidates, the more you learn about J.D. Vance, the more you're going to dislike him. The more you learn about Tim Walz, the more you're going to like this guy. It just seems to me that simple. And the reason I bring this up is I saw a video clip of Tim Walz sitting and talking with Kamala Harris. You know, it was one of those, you know, they were just conversing kind of thing. But, you know, they knew what they were saying. And what he was talking about, he was explaining how the Social Security survivor benefit, the death benefit, helped his family to move forward after his father passed. And, you know, it's again another one of those things where this is something I identify with him on. This is something that millions of Americans and American families are going to identify Look, you know, when I was 13, my mother died. And, you know, my grandparents, you know, were okay. You know, they led, you know, good, you know, middle class lives, but they were at a point where they weren't ready for a 13-year-old teenager to come into their lives. They were thinking about retirement. They're, you know, thinking about, you know, how to get life in order post children. And you know, into their home I came. And it, had it not been for the survivor benefits, and I can understand, wasn't a lot of money. Was not a lot at all, but it was enough to ensure that there was food on the table, that I got some of the things that I needed, and it eased the burden on them as they were moving into their golden years. And look, you know, picking up where unfortunately a deadbeat father never was around, and my mother, who had passed, could no longer. If they were unable to do that, you know, foster care is where I would have gone, and you would have seen, you know, who knows where you end up in those situations. There are great stories coming out, but sadly, too many people fall through the cracks. And it's this kind of program, this kind of safety net, this kind of investment. And I talk about this all the time. Our government has done a lot to invest in me to be a productive citizen. And I want that for other people. I want people in the same situation to have the same opportunities, to have the same benefits that I was able to use when I needed them. But when I saw Walz talking about this, this is the kind of guy you want in the White House. This is the kind of guy you want that close to that awesome power of the presidency. Someone who's lived a life of walking among us, the average working people. The people who know what it is to struggle a little bit. The people who know what it's like to maybe not be able to pay your bill at the end of the week or the end of the month. For me, it's that simple. But as he was talking about that issue, you know, it all came flowing back to me. I didn't understand it at the time, but I knew there was something that was there to help take care of me, to ensure that, you know, my grandparents didn't end up broke. And it's something that I remember Republicans, people like Paul Ryan, because Paul Ryan and I share that as well, as same with Tim Walz, wanting to destroy those programs. And I come back to this kind of self-loathing that has to go on the political right. They have this ideology of, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, hooray for me, the heck with everybody else. You know, I did this all alone, only me, this kind of hyper-individualism. And it flies in the face of their ideology when they have a history of getting some bit of a helping hand. Now, I've never said I wanted anyone to do it for me, but a helping hand is something that I think is a good idea. And this election for me is about, does a program like that, does this the program like the Survivor Benefit Program, does that survive a Trump presidency, a Project 2025 presidency? You know, I got to tell you, I loved what Tim Walz said about when he was a football coach. And it's spot on. Look, I use the football coach analogy all the time. You know, I say all the time, you know, when I was coaching football, every play I ever drew up scored a touchdown. Everyone. Even if they're only supposed to get a half an inch. But he said, look, you know, Tim Walz said of Project 2025, he said, I coached football long enough to know that when somebody draws up a playbook, they plan on using it. And for me, that is a perfect way to frame Project 2025. You know, Trump has tried to run from it because he knows politically how bad it is. But the idea that they went through hundreds of people, millions of dollars, tons of focus groups and think tanks and you name it, and the entire right-wing intelligentsia coming together to put together their one wet dream list of bad ideas and in one document. Do you really think they're going to shelf it? Do you really think it's just going to collect dust? No. Every word in there was meticulously decided on. Every policy debated, discussed, for maximum value for whom? Not you, not me, not working people, but the very wealthy and powerful, the people who fund these things. So again, I love this Tim Walz guy because he is so radically normal. He is so extremely one of us. And to be able to pull that back and say, look, you know, when I coached football, I did this long enough. Somebody draws up a play, they're going to use it. When they drop a playbook, they're going to use it. It doesn't. It's not just some mental exercise. And this is, again, one of those moments of, you know, which side are we on? Because there are definitely winners and losers in Project 2025. The winners are the wealthy, the powerful, the big corporations, the moneyed interests, which is the glue that holds the right wing together. What holds the right wing coalition together of evangelicals and business leaders and white nationalists and all of them, it's the money. It's the cash. It's the green, stupid. And until we say otherwise, they're going to continue to push on this. This election has the ability to kill off the MAGA movement and move the Republican Party back somewhere near the same line. And that's my hope for them. A massive defeat at the polls. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. When we come back, Claude Cummings, president of CWA, the Communication Workers of America, going to be here to share some thoughts. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Our quote of the day from President Biden at a campaign event with Kamala Harris, big campaign rally. He said, let me tell you what our Project 2025 is. It's beat the hell out of them. And look, yes, this is that kind of an election that we're going to have to go to the polls and send a very clear message about what kind of country, what kind of future we want to have. That's why I've asked CWA President Claude Cummings to come share some thoughts on why his union, the Communication Workers of America, have endorsed Kamala Harris. Their quote from July 25th was very clear. He says, on one side is a candidate who has always taken the side of corporate interests and is advancing a policy agenda that would destroy our union and take away fundamental workers' rights. On the other is a candidate with a consistent record fighting to empower the working class and unions, who has centered CWA members' concerns in her policies. The choice is clear. The choice is clear. And that's, again, why I've asked Claude Cummings to come share some thoughts. Claude, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much, Rick, for having me on your show. And hello to your listening audience. So happy to be a part of your broadcast. And I heard President Biden say that today, what our 2025 plan is, and I'm going to repeat that whenever I have an opportunity, because that was pretty cool to hear him say that, to be quite honest with you.
No, because you look at the reality of the project.
That plan is to beat Donald Trump. We have to make sure that he never sets foot in the White House again.
And, you know, I think the comments this week should be in the eyes, the ears, the inboxes of every union member, of every working person in this country. When Donald Trump praised Elon Musk for firing striking workers, that should be something that every working person takes to heart.
Yeah, he was very clear what his plan is. If you go on strike, you get fired. Simple as that. And you know, if they show you what they are, believe them. And that's what he has actually done. He has shown us that he does not stand for workers in this country versus an administration which is I've been an elected officer for 38 years, and this has been the most pro-labor administration in my lifetime. Someone who has stood up for working people, a president who's gone on the picket line. And of course, in Vice President Harris, we have a leader who has co-sponsored the PRO Act, which would make it much easier for workers in this country to organize. She was a supporter of the Public Services Workers Freedom to Negotiate Act. And so she has a history of supporting workers, and she will, I believe, without a doubt, continue what President Biden has done in this administration and being the most pro-labor administration again in our lifetime.
Yeah, it harkens back to the old labor song, which side are you on? And the PRO Act is one of those issues, I'm sure, as you know, because there are no Republican sponsors. Right. And for me, that's the litmus test. Are you with us or are you against us? If your name's not on that list, clearly you're against us.
You're exactly right. And she's also, as part of the White House Task Force on Worker Organizing and Empowerment, she actually led that effort for how federal government should make it easier for workers to organize to join a union. And as a matter of fact, she's invited several CWA members to roundtable discussions on their experiences. She visited the New Flyer Electric Bus Manufacturing Company with some of our members. And it wasn't just an opportunity to take pictures. She actually asked questions from our members on what was taking place in that in that factory. And that's the kind of leader we should want in this country.
Oh, without question.
Set up for working people in this country.
And without question. And I look at her first decision as a candidate and in picking Tim Walz as her vice president. For me, I don't think you could have picked a better person, a union member, a father, a coach, a guy who is radically normal to be on that ticket, who knows what it's like to have to, see a paycheck not go far enough. I think a perfect pick and really a very good ticket for working people. So as you're out talking to members and you're out pushing this endorsement, and good on you guys for endorsing her, is that the message? Is this where we're focusing our message on?
I think that's what it should be. When you take a look, Rick, at just think about for a minute the infrastructure bill. I will not live to see, maybe you will, maybe others will, I will not see the end of what's going to take place with the rebuilding of the infrastructure in this country. The semiconducting manufacturing companies that they're bringing back into this country, and specifically like the announcement that came out about Micron, where it was stated from the White House that CWA would sit down with Micron and work out a labor peace agreement. Is the Trump administration going to do that? Is the Vance administration going to do that as vice president? No, that's not going to happen. But will it happen under a Harris-Waltz administration? You're darn right it will. And that's what we need to be talking about. Yeah. There is a sharp contrast in where they stand when it comes to worker rights.
I got to tell you, one of the things I love about Tim Walz more than, and it's a personal thing, I've been saying for the last 2 years that Biden, Democrats, labor, folks on our side of the aisle don't take credit for stuff well, right. Don't promote ourselves very well. And what Tim Walz did when that bridge went between his state of Minnesota and Wisconsin, he put up a big sign saying, hey, this was brought to you by, federal money, by Joe Biden money, by our money. This was an investment by we the people. And I've been saying that's the kind of promotion that I want to see, because I said from the beginning when that infrastructure bill was passed, the first thing you got to get are giant 20-foot statues of that sign that they were putting on gas pumps of Joe Biden saying, I did that, and taking credit for it. And one of those areas, clearly, that you guys are invested in is the rollout of rural broadband,
which,
as you've said, we may not live to see the effects of it, but we know it's going to be there for future generations, which I think that's more important than all of this.
That's, you're exactly right. And just think about it. During COVID, we had children that actually had to drive to a McDonald's or some other fast food establishment just in order to get Wi-Fi. That's a shame in a country like the United States. And so what's going to happen with this infrastructure bill? It's going to make sure that we have broadband, we have Wi-Fi in those rural communities. And I agree with you. We don't brag enough about what we do. And I've said that even about labor on Labor Day, and it's great to have the picnics and things of that nature, but some of us ought to be on television interviews, on radio interviews, talking about the fact that it's labor who brought you the weekends. It's labor who brought you vacations. It's labor that brought you, brought you Social Security. It was labor who have brought you these different holidays that you're enjoying, you know, throughout the year. My mother would say this to me: "It's a pretty poor dog that won't wag his own tail occasionally," and I don't think we wag our tails enough about what we have done as labor unions to make it better for workers in this country, and what this administration has done to make it better for workers in this country. Again, the most pro-worker administration in our lifetime.
Preach that, because you know it's the central thesis of this entire program. Because look, I talk about how the union card I've carried in my wallet for 35 years, took me from a housing project in Cleveland to a solidly middle class existence where my children will never see the horrible, the poverty, the inhumanity of man, right, if you will, that I grew up with. And it's because of that union card. It's because of that contract. It's because of the demands for better wages, hours, conditions. And you're right. You guys don't do this enough, so you need to come back on this program more often.
And I'd be more than happy to anytime, Rick, because we don't talk about it enough.
So let's talk about this, because, you know, I just saw a clip and I just talked about it a minute ago, that Tim Walz and I share a historical past. He had a parent who passed away when he was younger. My mother died when I was 13. We both were able to collect Social Security survivor benefits. This is the kind of government programs, the kind of helping hands that we should be promoting in a way that average everyday working people have that safety net so that they can go out and strive to do great things. Do you think this is going to be an issue between, you know, someone like Walz, who has a very good labor record, and someone like J.D. Vance, who has a zero lifetime score by the AFL-CIO and has some really creepy ideas on family and work? Do you think this is a central thing, or does it not matter because of how bad Trump is compared to Harris?
Oh, no, I think it's going to be a central thing. And think about this. Look at the attacks that he's come under just for feeding kids, just for feeding children. Think about that. And some of the other positive things that he has done in that state to help workers, like helping women in their reproductive rights. And so I think that as workers and as individuals, I think we need to think of what type of future do we want in this country? Do we want a country and a leader that's going to stand for our democracy, our right to vote, our rights to have reproductive freedom as far as women are concerned? Or do we want to go back to the days where we have those who are making it harder to vote, where workers don't have a right to stand up and speak out on things that are issue that are important to us in this country? And think about this. Trump has said on the first day, my first day as president, I'm going to be a dictator. Is that what we really want in this country? Is that what we want our children subjected to? I'm amazed when I see the crowds that support him, and yet he stands for some of the things that are in the Project 2025 that are doing nothing but taking this country backwards. So there's a sharp contrast in the two leaders of Rick.
No, absolutely. And this is where the labor movement in this moment has to, in a unified, loud voice, point this stuff out, because they have written down in a 900-plus page document how they want to repeal the 20th century and move us back to the Gilded Age, right, back to the Lochner era and before. So for me, this is one of those educational opportunities to go and get out and talk about real true ideology. You know, what direction do we take this country? And I think most people would agree with us. We want people who are willing to work hard, play by the rules. We want them to get ahead. We want our children to do better than we did. We want our grandchildren to do better than our children. We want that American dream that we were sold as kids.
Right. And listen, it's going to be difficult for Vice President Harris to top what Joe Biden has done for the labor movement. But I think that she's just as committed as President Biden is. I think because of her work on the task force on worker organizing and empowerment, she will be ready to go from day one to do what's needed to support labor unions and workers in this country. She is the type of leader that we need.
Yeah, no, I've been saying I think she's going to pick up the mantle that Joe Biden has set down because I think he's put us on the right path. I think that, Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are going to run us in the right direction and continue the work that, Biden has done because it has been transformational. And I think history will smile not just on his sacrifice for the country to step aside and let and let this move forward, but for the, legislation and the guidance of the last 3.5 years. I think history will, smile on him. But here's the thing, you said that President Biden was the most pro-labor leader in at least in my lifetime. I joke that he found Obama's comfortable shoes and found a picket line. But, you know, he invited you and, a number of other labor leaders back in July aboard Air Force One. I've always wondered, what's that like?
Man, what kind of, what an experience, right? I thought back to President Obama. If you recall, Rick, he was asked, what are you going to miss more when you leave office? He said, I'm going to miss the plane. And I see why now, because, man, it is some type of flying machine. It gets up in the air and it gets down quickly. But that was quite an experience, and I enjoyed just talking with the president in a in a place where he didn't have to be so formal and things of that nature. And let's just give it to him. I think it's great that he made the decision to step down like he did. And our union, I'm so glad, without hesitation, supported the vice president. But I'm thankful. I never thought a young kid from Cashmere Garden High School in, Houston, Texas, would have an opportunity to fly on Air Force much. I watched Air Force One land here in Houston and always thought about how beautiful that aircraft is and how much of a joy it would be to one day sit inside. But man, to actually be able to do it was some type of treat. I understand. Trust me, it was quite an experience.
No, I've heard that a number of times. And look, the presidency is a revered position, and I think Joe Biden has done it very well. Last line of questioning I've got for you. Obviously, next week's the big Democratic National Convention. I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of how great Joe Biden has been. I'm throwing him up there. Let's put him on Mount Rushmore. But ultimately, this convention is going to come out of unifying the party, having a direction from the end of this to the election time, and having those policies and that message that says, American worker, we're going to make your life better. What are you hoping for coming out of this convention? What are you hoping the messaging will be from the Harris-Walz ticket?
Let me just say this to you. I have been an advocate ever since had an opportunity to view the president of the Teamsters speak at the Republican convention, and I'll just leave that right there. I was advocating for an opportunity for the campaign and the convention to give labor leaders an opportunity to address the convention for a couple of reasons. First of all, so we could talk about what this president has done for us and this administration has done, both the president and the vice president. But also so they could really see what the labor movement leadership looks like. So on Monday night at 7 p.m., I, along with six other labor leaders, very diverse, women and men of color, will have an opportunity to address the convention and talk about what this president and vice president have done to support working people in this country, to help maintain the middle class in this country, because there would not be a middle class if it were not for labor unions. And I believe that that we will leave there after our comments. I believe that people will be energized and understand clearly that that we have no choice but to elect Kamala Harris as President of the United States and Tim Walz as Vice President. No doubt, none. And I'm quite proud of having that opportunity to do that. And I believe that we will leave that convention energized and ready to go to work.
There you go.
And no organization in this country can talk to workers, can talk to individuals like unions can. We use this term all the time. It's our superpower. It's our superpower. The way we visit with each other, the way we talk with each other, the way we engage with other workers and the community, about the need to support an administration that supports working people in this country. And I believe that we'll leave that convention energized and ready to go to work.
Amen. I am looking forward to it. We will be in the hall. We will be on Radio Row. We'd love to have you come by our booth and sit down with us again, because this convention, I think, is going to be electric, as this short campaign has been. And I'm hoping for a good message on the other side. Claude Cummings, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts with us.
Higher energy. I have not seen this type of energy since the Obama campaign, to be quite honest with you. And even here in Texas, that is all red, a red state. The energy here is absolutely fantastic, and I believe we just keep our pedal to the metal. And if we do that, come January 20th, we will be electing Kamala Harris and Vice President Walz.
There you go.
To office.
Claude, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
All right. Very much. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Our good friend, Claude Cummings. Check out their website, cwaunion.org. We're going to take a quick break. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Matt Nair on air.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy, few showers around tonight and a low in the mid-60s. And more clouds around for tomorrow, maybe a pop-up shower and highs in the mid-70s. Mostly sunny with a high in the low 80s Sunday. A couple of nice days Monday and Tuesday, mostly sunny and highs near 80. It's 69 degrees right now.
Midday Magazine, talk radio that speaks with you, not at you. Join the conversation 4 to 5 Monday through Friday as we discuss local issues, events, and more. We'll be here interviewing some of your favorite local people. And find the podcast at civicmedia.us. Midday Magazine, a dialogue like no other. Only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday in the program, we talked with Michael Sonato, a reporter over at The Guardian, who pointed out that the Association of Flight Attendants filed a federal lawsuit against SkyWest Airlines, the largest regional carrier in North America. And the allegation is that SkyWest In-Flight Association, the allegation is it's nothing more than a fake company union, which got me on the whole company union rant and made me go, well, this is something we should really be talking about, because Project 2025, the Trump plan, kind of wants to make this great again. And here to share some thoughts on that, the person I view as an expert on all things labor, I've asked our good friend Eric Loomis to come talk with us. Eric's a professor, historian. He is one of the chief cook and bottle washers over at Lawyers, Guns, and Money blog, and also the author of a must-read, A History of America and 10 Strikes. Eric, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So I see this story. We talked with Michael Sonato yesterday about this SkyWest In-Flight Association, which just in its name sounds like a company union. But the allegation is that this is a fake company union, and the company controls it. And there's some people who have come out and said, yeah, they control it. So it harkens me back to some of the fake company unions of the past, you know, much like the Ford Employee Association of the 40s.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the idea was to basically cut off union organizing by giving workers a theoretical voice by which they could somehow make their voices heard to the employer, but actually do nothing, right? That, in other words, you had unions in the 1910s is really when this starts. They're doing all kinds of stuff. They're organizing. They're winning some campaigns. But crushing them was giving some of the employers bad publicity. And so to create the idea of a company union so we can pretend like workers have a voice, and then, you know, they can complain or whatever, but then the company's going to do nothing about it.
Right.
And it really just served to, you know, as a PR device to continue to strip any rights or voice from the workers. And that does get part of the National Labor Relations Act rules company unions illegal, but there have been attempts to bring them back by another name over many, many years. And so the SkyWest thing is another example of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, knowing labor's history, and you point out, you know, it was a PR nightmare to just go in and beat them up and shoot them. Couldn't do that anymore. Couldn't go shooting into tents, killing striking workers like they did in Colorado during the mine wars. You can't beat them up on picket lines. No more billy clubs. So they went the briefcase route. They went the route of, hey, we're going to give you a suggestion box and we'll give you the illusion of having some control or some input, but no real power. And I see us revisiting that, and I'm sure you've seen Project 2025. I'm sure you've seen J.D. Vance's proposals. It seems like we're going to try and make this great again.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly the goal of the Republican Party, of Donald Trump and of J.D. Vance and of the people behind Project 2025, is to effectively eliminate the union movement in this country and replace it once again with these fake organizations that do nothing but serve as a place for the company to put its favorite employees and to report on workers who are complaining in order to be able to fire those workers, which is certainly what happened with company unions quite frequently. And, you know, it's part of this much larger project to effectively roll back the 20th century, which is, you know, the thing about Project 2025 is they're just openly saying they want to return to the 19th century. Like, right. Every bad thing of our past, every kind of inequality, every kind of oppression, that's the policy of the Republican Party at this point, which is really shocking.
But we're hearing a movement, you know, because, look, we haven't learned the history of the Ford Company Union, or Bethlehem Steel had one, Goodyear. You know, there were a bunch of these companies during that era that were, you know, we're doing this, as you pointed out, to fend off actual independent union organizing. But they're doing it with a little bit different name. And this idea of cooperation, which seems to be a thread that's running through society right now. You know, it's no longer about the individual. We need to be teaching, you know, kids to be more cooperative. So this idea of, you know, cooperating with the employer and there being no real difference in the interests of the employer and the employee seem to be popping up more and more in my world. And I'm curious if you have a thought on that.
Well, I actually support the idea of cooperation. Right. I think that to a certain extent, reducing the constant talk about the individual, it could in fact be useful, because to do so is the kind of talk that should actually increase unions. Right. Because we should be cooperating. Fellow workers should be cooperating together in their interest against an employer. Right. And so it depends on what cooperation means. I think the cooperation in many ways is what unions are about.
Right.
Right. But it's not cooperating with your enemy. Right. It's not cooperating with the person who wants to fire you for reporting on an unsafe workplace. Right. It's not cooperation with somebody who has no respect for you at all. Right.
This idea
of cooperation they're pushing is simply a rhetorical device to say employers should once again be at the top of society and, you know, they're job creators and whatever they say goes, and you should learn to like it because, you know, because we rely on these wonderful people to employ us.
The benevolent dictator, which is why I couched it in terms of that there isn't a divide between employers and employees, that they have the same interests. And I've heard this, you know, far too frequently lately, that their interests are the same. The company should be profitable and productive, which I agree with. They should be profitable and productive, but for different reasons. And, you know, look, I want the company that I work for to be profitable and productive and efficient and all those things, so that when the contract's up, I can go and say, hey, you guys did well. We should be doing better as well. And that whole rising tide thing. But that's really not what this rhetoric's about. It's about, you know, getting on our team and, well, forgetting yours.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, no union wants to destroy the company. I mean, you know, maybe the IWW did, you know, 1910. But I mean, no union, every union is reliant upon the company succeeding. It's just who benefits from the company succeeding. And that's really the question.
Yeah, but, you know, isn't that the frame that the right has thrown out there? These companies just want to come in and destroy companies. These unions just want to destroy all these companies. They put people out of work. They destroy jobs. Hasn't that been the frame of the last 40 years?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, that's totally what Republicans have pushed and, you know, successfully to some extent, unfortunately. But yes, I mean, the idea that it's just a ridiculous statement, right? The idea that a union wants to hurt a company. No, the union obviously wants employees to get a fair shake from the company. And that happens by the company doing well. And so it's absurd, but it's been very effective for Republicans to push this thing, to push these ideas. And, you know, I think that you see it in things like the Mercedes loss in Alabama, where in the end, you know, this right wing propaganda still has quite a bit of effectiveness among workers. But so, yeah, it's a sad thing.
No, you're right. But you know, the thing is, you know, I go back to and I use the quote, whether Jay Gould actually said it or not, you know, is up for debate. But it's attributed to him, this idea that you could pay one half of the working class to murder the other half. I know we think we're better than that, but this week you saw the conversation between Elon Musk and Donald Trump, where, you know, Trump is praising Musk for being the dictator and firing striking workers and heaping praise on him for that. I got to tell you, the thing that popped into my head, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you know, Donald Trump is a dictator. I mean, that's what he wants. And he, you know, he absolutely wants employers to have the right to fire union workers or fire workers for any reason. I mean, look at his own history with unions, right? I mean, his own history of not paying workers or, you know, contractors that have done work for him, his own history of ripping people off. I mean, that's what the man is. And so it's hardly surprising that he would, you know, that he would embrace this kind of, you know, dictatorship of the billionaire, which is really, you know, what he aspires to.
Now, this week, in response to Trump's comments, my union, the Teamsters Union, put out a statement saying that firing workers for organizing, striking, and exercising their rights as Americans is economic terrorism. They say the ability to strike is the most powerful tool workers have to demand better wages and safe working conditions. And my mind is like, yeah, absolutely, 100% on board with my Teamster union on this. But put that into context of, you know, going and basically praising Trump and this Republican Party that has been horribly anti-union. The two don't seem to mesh.
Well, Sean O'Brien just became a complete clown when he went and spoke in front of the Republican National Convention. I mean, there's no other way around it. You know, it wasn't a terrible moment for the labor movement. It was a terrible moment for the Teamsters, right? The labor movement simply just dismissed this entirely. But O'Brien wanted his ego stroked, I guess. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, he's absolutely correct that this is economic terrorism. But it's not as if a man who had placed Eugene Scalia, the son of Antonin Scalia, as his Secretary of Labor, was a man, you know, would somehow be pro-union, right? I mean, he has a record, not only his personal record, but 4 years in the White House, which evidently Sean O'Brien did not pay attention to.
Yeah, but this is that kind of moment where, look, I think unions do better when you can use criticism and move into the right direction. And I'm hoping this is one of those moments of clarity, one of those moments, those epiphany moments. You go, well, yeah, it was. I gave it a shot. It didn't work. Now we've got to get to work at educating our members about what really is. And I go back to this company union thing, because I know a lot of red hat Republicans. I know a lot of my Trump supporter, union members who don't think it's possible that they're going to be affected because they've got a contract. Their union's doing well by them. They don't think that it's possible to end up in a scenario where you have a company union or where your union gets broken or someone comes in and fires everyone because they haven't experienced it yet.
Yeah. Well, it's very easy to, you know, delude yourself. I mean, there was a lot of people who thought, oh, you know, abortion's really a settled matter and the Republican Party saying this or that. But, you know, abortion will never, in fact, be illegal again. Well, now women are dying. And this is exactly the same strategy for the union movement, right? I mean, the Supreme Court is filled with six incredibly anti-labor people. Every single term, they roll back labor rights more and more and more. It's quite clear that the goal is to eventually either repeal the National Labor Relations Act and Fair Labor Standards Act and OSHA and all the other pro-worker legislation, or if not fully do that, make them effectively non-functional. And so, you know, these Republican voting union members can lie to themselves if they want to and say everything's going to be okay. Donald Trump's actually my friend, you know, but they're eventually going to find out. And in terms of the Teamsters, the thing that they need to do simply is tomorrow make an announcement that they're endorsing Kamala Harris, and then spend the next 90 days engaging in a massive member education campaign to get out the vote for her.
Well, there's no question about that. And look, this week, the Teamsters National Black Caucus did indeed endorse Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in opposition of what the International has done so far. And this is the courage of being a union member. And look, in Sean O'Brien's speech at the RNC, he talked about having the ability to have the courage and having to be able to have your voice heard because you're a union member. So for me, it is the most union thing ever to dissent. But you mentioned something a second ago about the Supreme Court. And as we speak, you know, Amazon is pursuing, labor is pursuing, saying that the National Labor Relations Act violates their constitutional rights. And I wonder how that's going to play out, because I don't see them overturning the NLRA entirely, but I do see them weaponizing it and making it a tool that employers use against workers instead of the way it was intended.
Well, it'd be a big step to just overturn the entire National Labor Relations Act. I do think that would get at least 3 votes on the Supreme Court right now, though. I think that Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch absolutely would support that. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the decision, whether it's at some point of the opinion, whether it's concurring or something else, that one of those 3 doesn't make that recommendation and encourage future cases to do that. But in many ways right now, the National Labor Relations Act, it has already been taken over by the employer, right? I mean, we know how hard it is to win a union, and then to get that first contract is so difficult. This is the reason that Joe Biden had gone so far to promote the PRO Act, right? Because that would sort of reset the playing field. In many ways, they've already kind of succeeded at that. At least in slowing down unions. So, I agree with you that probably that whatever the decision's going to be will repeal pieces of it or roll back parts of it. But these companies basically saying, the entire National Labor Relations Act should be held unconstitutional. I mean, we haven't really seen this since about 1940 in terms of a serious argument. And it's not actually impossible today. So every union member needs to understand where their economic interests apply. It's absolutely in supporting Democrats, because there's one party in this country that may not be as pro-union as we would like, but it's still more or less pro-union. And then there's another party that wants to destroy the entire labor movement. And Project 2025 just lays this right out. So I have a theory about life, which is that when people say things, you should probably believe them.
Yeah, no, that's the famous Maya Angelou quote. When people tell you who they are, believe them. And they've told us who they are repeatedly. And again, there's the hope, because for a long time we've gotten a little comfortable, especially us union members who have had it pretty good over these last 40, 50 years, to be able to vote on other issues. When I first started working, the old timer said, look, you vote your job, you vote your paycheck, you vote what puts a roof over your head, food on your table, and clothes on your children's back. That's what you vote on. All that other stuff you can fight for and advocate for, but you vote your job. Maybe this is the beginning of maybe some people waking up and returning to that thought process.
I think so. I mean, I think we are moving in the right direction. I mean, Donald Trump is not a popular man by any stretch of the imagination. And it's true that neither was Biden. But we don't really know what's going to happen in November. It's still very, very close. But I do feel like the nation is maybe starting to wake up from some of this extremism. Yeah. And the more aggressive that the extremists get, and these crazy things that J.D. Vance says is a great example of it, the more people are repelled by it. So, I'm moderately optimistic about this, but clearly, the labor movement needs to recognize, who's acting in their interests and who isn't. And it couldn't be more clear.
No, I think the entire labor movement, with the exception of the IBT and some police unions, I think they get it. We'll see what happens in the coming days. Last question I've got for you, because I want to take this back to the company union thing, because there is some interest by people in having these suggestion box unions and having this kind of cooperation, this kumbaya idea of cooperation. Is this something you think could pass here in the U.S. and do you think we would tolerate it?
That's a great question. You know, only 10% of American workers are unionized. And so it wouldn't shock me if there was a lot of people who were not members of unions, who might put some kind of hope into that sort of thing. I think that you would see incredible fury from unionized workplaces. And, you know, I mean, I think among, you know, the kind of the irony of this whole conversation is that, you know, in many ways, the kind of daily militants of the Teamsters, you know, is really quite laudable and remarkable. And I think that they would perhaps be leaders in fighting against that, because they do have a strong understanding of what being a union member means, at least in terms of, I think, of ideas of solidarity. So that's a great question. I think it would be a complex response, but, you know, I don't think, like we saw with the overturning of Roe, I mean, it has led to some political backlash, yes, but it hasn't exactly led to the revolution,
right?
I mean, a lot of people are just kind of like living their lives. So I don't know. I mean, I think that one thing that Republicans have understood is that, for the most part, people don't pay that much attention to the details of policy. And unless they're stupid enough to advertise it, like I have with, you know, this Project 2025, you know, people are pretty easily, you know, willing to just sort of go with the flow and vote on vibes or whatever it might be. So I think it would be a complex response, but I don't think it would. I fear that it would not lead to a massive militant movement like perhaps we hope it would. But I could be wrong.
I vibes. I'm sorry. I just laughed at the vibes thing because I've been hearing that so much lately that I go, no, that doesn't change actually understanding the issues. But Eric, as always, great stuff. I appreciate the time, the expertise. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you for having me.
Our good friend Eric Loomis. I want to hear your thoughts. Would you be interested in a company union? You know, look, you know, a lot of companies have suggestion boxes, have committees on this, that, and the other thing to encourage, you know, kind of engagement and getting people active. Something you'd be interested in? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day that the U.S. Congress passed the National Apprenticeship Act. It was also known as the Fitzgerald Act. The purpose of the act was to, quote, formulate and promote the furtherance of labor standards necessary to safeguard the welfare of apprentices. Apprentices are workers learning a skill set. They are typically paid less than skilled workers or journeymen during the course of their training. Apprenticeship programs are especially found in the building trades, where learning skills like plumbing or electrical work might take years of dedicated training. But before the protections of the 1937 Act, there was no national standard governing apprenticeship programs in the United States. This led some apprentices to be exploited. In 1911, Wisconsin became the first state to pass legislation to structure the apprentice system. In the 1920s, multiple labor unions advocated for national apprentice standards to promote fairness and safety for workers. Recognizing the need for national apprentice guidelines, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt commissioned a committee to study the issue. They were tasked with developing training standards for apprenticeship programs. The 1937 law gave the committee the authority to complete their job. The Committee on Apprentice Training became a permanent part of the U.S. Department of Labor. The Bureau of Apprenticeship works with state governments to ensure the fair treatment of apprentices. Today, apprenticeship programs provide classroom and on-the-job training to help develop a skilled labor force. In 2015, 52,500 participants graduated from registered apprenticeship programs. Nearly 500,000 workers participated in apprentice training programs, learning skills that will build their financial security.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Eric brings up an interesting thing. And the question that I asked for a specific reason. Would we tolerate the idea of company unions? Because, look, I've talked to a lot of people who've said, look, you know, there isn't any difference there isn't any, how was it put to me last? There isn't daylight between the interests of the company and the workers. And I've talked about this before because I've heard this statement a lot over the years that you know, they're tied at the hip, and they are. They have tied economic interests. Employers and employees have a shared relationship. And this is where cooperation is important, because you do want these companies to do well. You do want them to be profitable and efficient, and that your work matters. Everyone, I think, wants that. Even though the right keeps selling us this nonsense, oh, these lazy union workers, they never want to do anything. They just... We've heard it all. They put companies out of business, which is the most ludicrous of all. It's almost as ludicrous as we can cut taxes on the very wealthy, and tax receipts will go up. We'll get more money into the government by cutting taxes on the very wealthy, and not, you know, doing what they've done and sticking it to the working class. But this idea of, and Loomis hit on it. Look, 10% of the workforce in this country is organized. 6% in the private sector, about 33% in the public sector. The natural rate, as I understand it, if you had the kind of laws that would encourage people to join unions, would allow for the ease of joining unions, would not have all of the harassment, the intimidation, the captive audience meetings, all of the stuff that employers have done to workers, the pain, the suffering stuff. You did away with that. I think the natural rate is about 30, 33, 35%, where we were back in the 60s, when it was easier to organize, where it was easier to make demands, because you had a government that didn't stand in the way. You had a court system who was generally sympathetic to workers organizing. And because, look, we came out of the Depression. Thank you, corporate America. But it's got me thinking about, you know, would the 90% of people who aren't in unions be drawn to the idea of having something of an association, a worker association in their workplace, where they could at least have the illusion that they're going to get some kind of representation? Because I think what workers are finally figuring out, because when I was younger, everyone was, you know, I'm going to make my own deal. You know, I'm a master negotiator. I'll make my own deal. And what they ended up doing is making really bad deals, not just for themselves, but for everybody else. It's the rare occasion in the working class that people have the kind of skill that they can go in and negotiate themselves a better deal than everyone else. So I, you know, I've been thinking about this. Would this be something that would be appealing to the 90% who have no representation, who know that they are at will, who know that any minute their employer can send them to the street? Would this be something that they would flock to? And I don't know, because there's a lot of that's already going on, and you know, I know a lot of employers have, like, you know, committees, and you know, let's you know, way, and I think a lot of those committees fail because you don't see any real progress. And again, this has been my experience with people that I've met and talked to over the years who have engaged in these things, because if you don't have the independence of the union to withhold their labor, because that's the ultimate tool, isn't it? I mean, it's the last arrow in the quiver. It is the, you know, the nuclear option, if you will, which no worker wants to go on strike. Nobody wants to have to lose a paycheck and worry about if they're going to lose their health insurance or lose their jobs. But sometimes it's the last option, and it's what sometimes jump starts employers to going, okay, we need to get serious. So I question, and this is where I'm throwing this back out to everyone to ask a simple question. If that arrow isn't there, if that stick isn't there with the carrot, does it matter? You know, is it really a union, or is it just another thing that employers do to make employees feel like they matter, but they really don't? So if there are examples out there, I would love to hear them. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, for any of that. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. You'll find ours, freespeech.org, for our video content. And as always, you know, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM. W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.